Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Tuesday, August 20th, 2013. Let's get started right away by the market report today. You have gold. Gold, up $6 at $1,372 off its high of $1,379. Silver wasn't so lucky, but not bad. Down 16 pennies today at 23.13, but we did touch a high of 23.45. Platinum up 13 at 15.26. Palladium down 3 at 15. I'm sorry, at $753. So once again, palladium down 3 at 753. The USDX today is trading down slightly lower, 0.35. at 80.91. Crude oil took a dive today, down $2 at 104.92. And the equity markets today didn't do much. Not a lot of activity in the markets. The Dow was down 7 points at 15,003. The NASDAQ was up 24 points at 36.13. S&P up 6 at 16.52. The 10-year yield pulled back from its high of yesterday, 2.81, down 0.07. And everything is interesting. Alfred, good afternoon now.
No, Melody, especially interesting to see crude oil drop $2 in one day. I mean, it's not earth-shattering, but it's surprising. It surprises me, at least. And I wonder what the cause was.
Well, I think it did have a little bit of Egypt turmoil in there to push it up to the 107.
And you think now that turmoil is settling down? Is that what you're thinking?
I don't think it's settling down, but the markets might. There are some changes in there, which I see we're going to be talking a little bit about today. And even to the release of... Mubarak was released, so maybe they were able to tie it or settle it for a day or two, so you saw it come back a little bit. But oil is still high, and I don't expect it, even without Egypt, you're not going to see it much lower. So I mean, it didn't move up that much with Egypt, so
I think it'll go higher. I think it just has to, because everything tends to point toward a less stable Middle East. It's not highly stable under ideal circumstances. And right now it looks like it may be becoming less stable. And if it is, that should translate into higher prices for gold, or excuse me, higher prices for crude oil. And
which translate to higher prices in gold, too.
Typically, it does. There's a close correlation. Yeah. There's a close correlation between the it's not an absolute, but there's, you know, when gold moves up, oil tends to move up and vice versa. Not necessarily so, but there seems to be a correlation. So, in fact, we've got an article. You know, I wanted to talk a little bit about Egypt, and we've got a couple of articles on this. And one of them is from the weekend. Egyptian authorities storm mosque, consider dissolving Muslim Brotherhood. Egyptian security forces stormed a Cairo mosque Saturday after shooting at armed men firing down from the minaret, rounding up hundreds of supporters of the country's ousted president, who hid there overnight after violent clashes killed 173 people. Security officials said the said office, well, it goes on. But my main point is that there is now a bit of a holy war taking place in Egypt. And much to the Muslims' surprise, this holy war, as evidenced by the military attacking a mosque, this holy war is not being waged by the Muslims against the Christians or the Jews. It's being waged by the secular government against the Muslims, or at least the Muslim Brotherhood. And that's, you know, that's really, that's strange and surprising. You wouldn't expect to see that coming out of Egypt. I can't say it's an enormous surprise, but still, the military attacking a mosque, that's strange. And here it goes further. Here's another headline from DEPCA.
That's if it really was the military. I mean, there's so much. I mean, you can have so many outside fractions in there trying to stir up stuff. You don't know who really did it.
Well, that's probably true. And I imagine they have as many conspiracy theories in Egypt as we have here in the United States.
And and there were many Christian homes that had been marked.
Oh, I get that.
So, I mean, there's...
I'm not saying there's no, you know, violence against Christians, for example, in Egypt. I'm not suggesting that, but I'm just saying it is surprising. I would not have expected the government to go after Muslims, even the Muslim Brotherhood. That's a little surprising to me. And it's got to be surprising to others, including Israel. Here's a headline from DEPCA, which is an Israeli publication that says Israel stays clear of Egyptian crisis, fearing Russian military's return to a second border after Syria. Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates, not Israel, are lobbying the West for support of the Egyptian military. Campaign is orchestrated by Saudi Director of Intelligence Prince Bandar bin Sultan. The prince is wielding the Russian threat as his most potent weapon for pulling Washington and Brussels behind Egypt's military chief, General Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, and away from recriminations for his deadly crackdown on the Muslim Brotherhood. So here we have Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates are trying to get the United States to continue to support the new military government in Egypt. And the United States is pulling away, and here's the problem. The veteran Saudi diplomat's message is blunt. Failing a radical Western turnaround in favor of the Egyptian military, Cairo will turn to Moscow. In no time, Russian arms and military experts will again be swarming over Egypt. This is 44 years after they were thrown out by the late President Anwar Sadat back in 1972. Now, this is just fascinating to me because if America abandons support for Egypt's military dictatorship, the Egyptian government may quickly turn to Russia for support. If Russia, which provides significant support for the Syrian government to the north of Israel, were to also gain a foothold in Egypt to the south of Israel, then Israel might become almost completely surrounded by Russians, or at least Russian technology. Thus, in theory, the day could come when Israel was facing an attack from two fronts, and the technology used by both attackers might be Russian. I'm not suggesting that it would be attacked by Russian soldiers, but it might be attacked by Russian technology. And I bet Israel finds that scary. Insofar as Russia has gained a foothold in Syria, and may gain another foothold in Egypt, does this indicate that the United States is losing influence or interest in the Middle East, and the Russians are moving in to fill the resulting vacuum? Is the United States, no longer dependent on Middle East oil, preparing to abandon the Middle East to Russia or perhaps China? Is the U.S. preparing to abandon Israel? You know, the cornerstone for American policy in the Middle East for the last 20 years has been Egypt. We supported Mubarak, we kept Egypt going, and Egypt kept the Middle East stable enough where no one attacked Israel. We supported Egypt in order to indirectly provide security for Israel. If the United States is preparing to cut its assistance to Israel, or excuse me, to Egypt, we can wonder, is somebody up there actually thinking maybe we're just going to walk away from Israel, or at least minimize our ties to Israel in the near future? We've seen reports that China's influence in Iran and even Iraq may be growing with China's increasing need for petroleum. If China were to move into Iran and Iraq and Russia were to move into Syria and Egypt, could we expect China and Russia to unite against Israel? Could we expect China to go to war with Russia, at least indirectly, for Middle East supremacy? These are interesting questions. And I mean, the whole thing is, it's like someone juggling, you know, three, four, half a dozen balls. It's hard to follow which way all the balls are going and how they're bouncing and the rest of that. And it's hard to predict how this is going to work out. But the truth seems to be, one thing is that Russia has enough of its own oil production and doesn't really need Middle East oil. Might be nice to have, but they're not dependent on it. So it appears that Russia is primarily in the Middle East for political reasons. China, on the other hand, produces insufficient crude oil out of its own country to feed its growing economy and hopes of becoming a world power. Therefore, China's need for Middle East oil might be far more desperate than Russia's need for political influence. If so, you can bet that China will be willing to fight in the Middle East to gain oil. Will Russia? Will the United States? Will the U.S. just kind of walk out of the picture, say to heck with y'all? Can any modern nation act as a world power that doesn't have access to cheap, plentiful domestic oil? You know, the United States rose to considerable power in part because we were one of the great oil exporting nations for a while there. And we had plenty of cheap oil in this country. And then the government shut the oil industry down dramatically, the domestic oil industry, and we started back in the 70s, and we started importing our oil from the Middle East. And I'm wondering if that marked, is it just a coincidence that the increase in imported oil, did that have anything to do with the decline in America's relative power throughout the world? I know we've been the main superpower, and I get that. But really, we are suffering a decline. And I'm wondering, is that a function of importing oil? Are we going to rise back to greater power, relatively speaking, in the global economy, because we're starting to produce our own oil again? We are becoming energy independent. Does that push us, is that going to push us closer to being, again, is that going to help us to maintain the role as global superpower? All these are interesting questions, at least to me, and they flow from the turmoil in Egypt. A lot of implications on that. It's not just about the Egyptian people. It's not just about the Muslims. It's about what's Russia going to do, what's China going to do, what's America going to do. Are we bailing out of the Middle East? Do you think we are in a permanent reduction of influence and power in the Middle East? What do you think, Melody?
Well, you know, it all comes back to home. You cannot be a superpower when your structure at home is falling apart.
Yeah.
And I think the world recognizes this. And I do believe these countries like Egypt and what's happening in the Middle East is being created. These situations are being created. And I think maybe we're not sure what the outcome might be, but I do believe this is all, a lot of it, not all of it, but a lot of it is intentional. This afternoon, I guess Obama's going to convene his National Security Council and cabinet level officials this afternoon to talk about the situation and the aid. Well, you had Senator Patrick Leahy. He told a lot of news outlets that the USA to Egypt has already been suspended. But the White House had declined and said those reports are not true. I can't imagine Leahy coming out saying that stuff unless he didn't know something. So, you know, but wars and rumors of wars. But I think a lot of the points that you make, Al, we are seeing things change.
Yeah.
And people are positioning, countries are positioning themselves so when the right moment comes along, they can strike and take advantage of it.
And again, it may be that this positioning is a reaction to U.S. withdrawal. If we become more energy independent, we have less interest in the Middle East. We're there primarily, instead of for the oil, but for Israel.
But with the reason we had that interest in the oil, though, was also because of the reserve currency. So, which is coming first, the decline of the U.S. dollar or of our interest in oil?
I think all of it is coming together. I think part of the reason that the government began to import oil, and they shut down much of the domestic oil industry back in the 1970s, was to guarantee, we were part of the deal, we would guarantee to buy X number of barrels of oil from Saudi Arabia or wherever.
And we'd protect them.
In doing so, we not only protected them, but by buying that oil with dollars, to some degree, I think maybe we were even supporting the petrodollar and making it real in a way that it might not have been if we only relied on some foreign countries to pay for crude oil with dollars. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, it may be, and now that the dollar is already folding up, it's dropped from 125 to 80 thereabouts, or 70, excuse me, down in the, yeah, 8, where is it right now in the U.S. dollar index? I don't have it right in front of me, and I can't.
Just a little above almost 81.
You're looking
about 80, 91, so almost 81.
All right, 81. So it's fallen 40 points since 2000. And then the scale itself is dropping. The dollar's lost a lot, and if we don't have petrodollars anymore, that's really the end of the dollar. It's no longer backed by gold, no longer backed by silver, now no longer effectively backed by petroleum, which it was from 1971 up until 2001, 2002. It was exclusive, pretty much exclusive.
Well, here's something else. The Saudis don't need us anymore. I mean, we helped them become wealthy beyond anybody's imagination. They have their foothold in so many European nations, other countries. One thing I've been told is, I mean, you have these countries are moving in, building, they're becoming part of a lot of the European nations. They don't need the U.S. anymore.
Yeah.
They can do it on their own now. So.
I understand. Well, again, it goes to the idea that the United States has lost a lot of power.
Mm-hmm.
Our involvement in the Middle East, in Afghanistan and Iraq has cost us dearly. We're already on the ropes because the petrodollar is no longer the exclusive currency for purchasing crude oil in the world, and its claim to be world reserve currency. It still is. But his claim is at least impaired. A lot of people can, I think, are just looking to see the writing on the wall and saying there's no point in betting on these people. The U.S. is going to go through some problems before it regains legitimate power. And perhaps they're backing away, and as they back away, a vacuum is created. Russia moves in, China moves in to the vacuum. We'll learn more. We live in interesting times, and we'll discuss it further when we return. I'm Alfred Addis, here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom, and we'll be right back.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
That's Melody attempting to whistle on the program, folks.
Did you hear that?
Yeah, I could hear it. I think they could hear it, too. I'm not sure whether or not that went out to the audience or not, but that was Melody trying to whistle. If I'm whistling, it's more melodious.
It was just
when
a whistle.
When Melody whistles, there's not much melody to it. When I whistle, it's got a little more melodious sound
hey,
to it.
Hey, they didn't name me Melody for nothing. So.
Well, it may be for singing rather than whistling. You know, not everybody who can sing can whistle, and not everybody who can whistle can sing. So
it was a whistling kind of a day.
All right.
And we're going to whistle right into the silver special. Okay. Folks are going to be whistling about this as they get their silver packages. We got a wide variety of products. 90% silver quarters. Haven't seen those for a while. They've been around. Premium's been higher. Premium's still a little high, but I went ahead and got a bunch of it. In this package, get your pencils out. Write it down. Most of you can't remember, so write it down. $20 face value, 90% silver.
$20?
$20 face value of 90% silver.
Okay.
$20. Are you writing it down, Al?
No.
Well, you should.
I know I should, but I'm not going to buy any right now. So
20. Well, it's just so you could remember. 20, okay. 1 ounce, silver eagles. 20, Morgan, silver dollars. 20, 1 ounce, silver rounds. So it's a 20, 20, and 20. And 20.
And 20, that's right.
And the package goes for $2,000. It includes all your shipping costs, and it's great to have a little bit of, you know, you're a little bit diversified in your silver products. For those that are just beginning to get into silver, it's a great little package. You'll understand what each product is. You get your 90% silver, 1 ounce silver eagles, Morgan silver dollars, and 1 ounce silver rounds. So it is a great little buy. All they have to do is give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Just call in and ask for the silver special, and we'll go over the product with you once again. But it is a great little buy, and it's nice to see the 90% silver. And visit our website at dgscoins.com. And sign up for the newsletter. It comes out on Mondays. Listen to our radio programs.
They're already listening to the radio program, Melody.
Well, they
they're
can go
listening
back.
Right now.
They can go back and re-listen.
Oh, re-listen. All right.
Yeah. For those who can't get enough of us.
All right. We'll see how many of those there are. We'll watch and see. Let's. What else do we have to talk about?
Here's a question from Murray. I don't know if it's a question or a statement. Where in
does it have a question mark at the end of the sentence?
Well, there's one question mark, one period, two periods, three periods. Where in the Constitution does it allow for the public treasury to be sent to foreign countries? Yes, there are a lot of balls being juggled out, but our founding fathers admonished us to stay out of these insidious affairs, and we keep doing the opposite. Let Europe protect the canal. They need it more than we do.
Yeah. I agree with them. I agree with them 100%. Our government, originally Washington, I believe, was one of them. It may have been Jefferson, but I think it was Washington who advised against these foreign entanglements. All we wanted to do was just trade. We didn't want to get involved politically with any of these foreign countries, but inevitably we get involved. Why do we get involved politically with these foreign countries, Melody?
Because we can.
No,
control.
It's not just that.
Control.
It would be because we start trading with them.
Yep.
That's point one. And then American merchants have some vested interest. They built a factory. They have money. They have supplies. They got something going on in some foreign country, and all of a sudden the politics change in the foreign country and threaten the interests of American merchants that are doing business over there. And the threat of that interference, the threat of lost profits, inevitably translates into the government sits back and says, well, we need to get involved. We need to throw our weight around here to protect the American merchants. And next thing you know, now we are politically involved in the fate of some country, in at least in part, because American commercial interests have made investments in that country. And the truth of the matter is, you could just let them go. You could have just sat back, and if the country changed and they seized the American interests over there, the commercial interests, I understand that some corporations would take a loss, but it may be that that loss would be a lot less expensive than the cost of military buildups and invasions and bombings and everything else to try to compel the world to recognize American commercial property rights. We might have been a lot better off just say, look, let's keep our businesses back here at home. Instead of building a new factory over in Peking, why don't we build it in Peoria, Illinois? Huh? And maybe we won't have to get into some wars. Maybe we can mind our own business. But it just occurs to me that at least a significant part of the reason why we are involved politically in foreign countries is because we are involved economically, and we can reasonably wonder how much of that economic involvement is truly necessary and how much would we be better off worse off, better off, if we just minded our own business and conducted our manufacturing and our sales right here within our own high tariff barriers within the United States of America. No.
You're right. Absolutely correct. It's time to pay attention to what's here at home.
Well, I agree.
But it will be forced on us sooner than later, I'm afraid. And today, the Federal Reserve holdings of publicly traded U.S. Treasury securities, federal government debt, pushed above $2 trillion for the first time last week. And the Fed's accounting for the previous week showed that it had owned approximately $1.9 trillion in U.S. Treasury securities as of August 7th. What are you laughing at?
I'm just thinking, this is just going to be such a great and wonderful thing. I mean, even if I know that no one, including myself, is going to enjoy a collapse. Now, I'm not saying a collapse is going to happen, but in that worst case scenario, collapse the economy. I'm still going to, even though I'm sure I'm going to have an unpleasant time and it won't be a perfect world for anyone, and including me, I can look at the Federal Reserve and say, ha, ha, ha. What goes around came around, and you guys got stuck with your own phony baloney paper, and maybe so much of it that who knows, maybe it even pushed the Federal Reserve into bankruptcy. There will be a certain irony, a certain sweet irony. The Federal Reserve gets caught with a bunch of fiat paper and fiat debt instruments of exactly the same kind that they've been publishing, printing, and forcing on the American people for the last 41, 42 years anyway, and maybe longer than that.
Well, India is having their problems. They had their stock index. It sank 1.6% today, extending the 4% loss on the 16th. That was Friday. And their currency tumbled about 2.5% against the dollar. But what's interesting is I was reading about India today. They go on and they talk about how the government has, their government slow growth, high inflation, a high fiscal deficit, high current account deficit, all point to the inescapable conclusion that India's problems are deep and structural. We could just eliminate India and put the U.S. in there.
I understand
and,
that.
Who wrote the article?
Who published the article that you're reading?
It was a Bloomberg.
All right. One of the things I've seen over the years, there are certain things that they will never publish in this country that are freely published in other countries. Mm-hmm. And they'll talk about, the United States has all these problems. They won't print those articles in this country because they don't want the American people to recognize the problems. But they'll print articles all day about the problems they have in India or China or Russia or whatever. And India, China, and Russia are the same way. They will conceal whatever the bad news is for their country, but point, look at the poor Americans or the poor Russians or the poor Indians from the Chinese position. It's I don't know. You know, it's the Divine Comedy, I guess. It's Dante and the Divine Comedy, if I recall correctly. And it just plays on human nature and a certain inherent absurdity. You know, we can't seem to get away from it at times. And if we could, who knows? Maybe we'd have a much better world. But of course, if we're going to get away from all of that absurdity, who would be left? Yeah. The only way I think we can probably get away from human absurdity sometimes is I think we have to evacuate the planet, move everybody to Mars.
Well, there are flights beginning.
Yeah, not enough for all of us, though.
So those of us who own gold and silver, it's going to be left to us to, because we'll be the only ones that have the ability to do things.
Well, you're right about that.
I know I am.
Because if and when we see a collapse of the fiat dollar, it will take all of the paper debt instruments with it. And when it does that, and we've harped on this repeatedly on the program, when it wipes out the debt, it also wipes out the correlative assets. For every man who owes $100,000, there's a creditor someplace who's got a piece of paper with this guy's signature on it that says he's going to pay $100,000. They treat it as an asset. Wipe out the debt, wipe out the asset. In the event of a serious financial collapse, the debt is going to be eliminated, but so will virtually all of our paper assets. And now who's going to have capital to invest in the next factory, in the next shopping center, in the next little business? Where's the capital coming from? And the answer will be, it'll come from those people who have tangible assets like gold. They're the only ones that are going to have capital to invest. I won't say it's an exaggeration to say they're the only ones, but people that are relying on paper debt instruments as a means to store and preserve their capital are taking a substantial risk. People who store that capital in the form of gold have minimized that risk.
Well, you know, Al, just recently, well, I guess, I don't know when it actually was launched, but Al Jazeera America has been launched. And what I think is going to be interesting is, I mean, I didn't realize they're going to be in about 48 million of the country's roughly 100 million homes that subscribe to television. And it'll probably bring a little bit of a different slant than your mainstream media programs.
Of course. It will be a little bit different than when we get out of the Catholic Church or the Protestant Church or the Jewish synagogues. We'll get a little bit different slant out of Al Jazeera, and it won't necessarily be a bad thing. I think it's unreasonable. It's asking for trouble to allow Muslims to emigrate into this country. And I respect the Muslim people. I respect their faith, but I also I wish Christians were as serious about their faith as Muslims, but they're not. And the Muslims, every place they go, as soon as they become a majority, they start telling people what to do. And before you're done with it, they succumb to the idea that, look, you got to be a Muslim if you want to keep your head. I won't say it happens all the time, but it happens a lot. This is like mixing oil and water by allowing Muslims to come in to a Christian that was previously Christian, primarily Protestant. You're just laying the foundation for internal turmoil that's going to persist for generations to come. And it will be as persistent as what you see in the Balkans. That's been going on for 800 years. Christians bumping heads with Muslims. And every 50 or 100 years they bust loose and see how many of each other they can kill or rob or whatever. And then they go back and they kind of peacefully coexist for a while, and then they break loose every so often. It's just wrong. It hasn't worked anywhere on earth, to my knowledge, where you've been able to sit down and take people with significantly different system of values and make them work together over an extended period of time, especially when any one of those groups is convinced that they have to change everyone else to think like they do. It's one thing to say you're in favor of religious freedom, but I don't see how you can say you're in favor of religious freedom for people who are not in favor of religious freedom. They'll just take advantage of your dedication, the idea of freedom of religion. Yeah, everybody can be whatever they want. When you make that available to a faith that is inclined to say, not when we get in control, you're not free. There ain't going to be any freedom of religion under the Muslims. Huh? Oh, there's exceptions, but there's a general rule that that's the way it appears. And so if it were up to me, I wouldn't let any more Muslims emigrate into this country. All right, but Al Jazeera is where you were talking about. And there's a good chance that they will give us a different side, where we'll be able to see things from a different side, and we may even get a more honest news media. They may force the rest of mainstream news to become more honest, simply because every time we tell a lie about Muslims, there'll be somebody at Al Jazeera that's going to try to straighten it out and present the truth. And over time, it'll have a benefit. It'll be good for perhaps everyone. And so I'm not worried about Al Jazeera coming to town, although I don't want to see any more mosques built in this country, and I'm sure I'll see a bunch more. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll take a break for some more commercial announcements. Be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a Ku band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here at Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. So if you want to place an order for some coins, 1-800-375-4188. I've said that number so many times, I've probably got it tattooed on the back of my brain someplace, but still, sometimes you're like, what the heck? You get older, folks, and you just have these little You have these little episodes where you can't quite remember what you used to remember. But I want to also remind you there's a second number, 1-800-596-8191. And if you had any questions on the Middle East, for example, we were talking about that earlier, or you have any questions on gold or silver or coins, or who's going to win the Preakness this year?
I got a
question.
Do
you have any questions on it? Okay, what's the question?
So far this year, $47.4 billion has been borrowed by companies for what purpose? It's a multiple choice. You want to hear the multiple choices? A, to invest in new plant and equipment, thereby fueling growth. B, to save money by paying down higher interest debt. C, to fund campaign contributions and super PAC spending. D, to pay dividends to private equity firms that own them.
Not a doubt in my mind. I may be mistaken, but my reading of the world is it's got to be to fund political campaign contributions.
Oh, Al, you're just one-minded.
All right, so what's the answer?
The answer, to pay dividends.
Pay dividends.
To pay dividends. Companies are borrowing money in order to pay their dividends. Apple is one of the worst ones. That's why they have that $13 billion of cash sitting on the sidelines. And I just find that interesting. It's cheaper for them to borrow money than
it is to pay out of their own treasury.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're saying right now?
They're borrowing to pay their dividends. Amazing.
Well, one of the things that's going to happen, if you have to borrow to pay your dividends, what would your dividend be if you didn't borrow?
That's right.
It would be much smaller.
Well,
presumably it would be smaller, and it would leave the country, it would leave the company in, I don't know, the stock would presumably go down a little bit if they couldn't pay the dividend they'd hope to pay. So they got to borrow money. Melody, lend me a couple $100,000 so I can pay out dividends on my corporation so I can fool all the rest of the people into investing, buying stock. He said, did you see how much Addis paid in dividends on that corporation? They must be making hand over fist.
That's exactly what they did. I'll tell you what, because all you heard for so long was dividends, they're paying this, they're paying that, and people were running to get their little old dividends. So amazing, $47 billion.
You know, one of the things that occurs to me, and I'm going to write an article on this probably for this week's American Survivor, but, you know, in the early 2000s, we had wire loans, which people, most of you remember, the banks were lending money. You walk in the door and you could have been a homeless person. And you walk in the door and say, oh, I'm making $100,000 a year. And the banks would take your word for it and allow you to borrow money from the bank to buy a home that was commensurate with your claim of $100,000 a year, even though you might only have been making $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 a year, $50,000, whatever. And they just laughed about it. They called it liar's loans. The banks knew that these people coming in were lying, but it didn't matter because the government was buying those loans by means of Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. They were purchasing those loans from the banks almost as soon as the bank got done cutting the deal. So the bank would make a couple of percent off each of these loans just as fast. Before the ink was dry, the bank was already making money off the loans, and the loan went on to the government. It would be the equivalent of me, I don't know, I could, you want to come in and pay me $20,000 for a Cadillac. All right? I'll sell you the Cadillac, a $50,000 Cadillac, for $20,000, because as soon as I do, I turn around and sell your $20,000 payment to Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and they give me $60,000. I'm making money. I'm not making money off the liars, but I am making money off the government. The government is encouraging me to accept the word of people that I know are lying. That's what was happening in broad strokes with the liar loans in the first part of the 20s, 2000s, 2000, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. But then the liar loans began to collapse. These people, they lied about how much money they'd put into they were earning, and it turned out that the truth came out, and they weren't making as much as they said they would, and therefore they couldn't make the payments on the house, and now they triggered a collapse in the real estate industry that very nearly triggered a collapse for the national and perhaps even global economies. We allegedly came very close in 2008, and much of this may have been triggered by liar loans. Now, having said all that, what do you think of modern government national debt? In the end, it's nothing but liar loans. That's what it is. Our government is borrowing money, or at least attempting to. And who are they getting it from? They're getting it from the Federal Reserve. They can't get anyone else, so they can't get many other people to agree to lend the money. And the government is promising to pay the money back. They've been doing it for years, and what the government did was initiate its own liar loans. They never intended to pay the money back, and they certainly didn't intend to pay it back in full. They've been liar loans all along, and that's why the national debt has become so enormous. They knew it couldn't be repaid. They laughed, they joked, and in the final analysis, your congressmen, your senators, your presidents laughed and grinned, just like the people walked into the bank and got themselves a new house based on a liar loan. Our government's been doing the same thing because it works on a different scale, and it has access to funds around the world. We've been able to sustain our own government's liar loans a lot longer than we're able to sustain the liar loans that were issued by the banks. But you can pretty much bet that we're going to see something coming from America's, the government's liar loans. We're going to see an adverse consequence very similar to the adverse consequence we saw out of the bank's liar loans. People think they're fun. They think they're clever. They think they're funny. They think they can lie and make good things happen. But I insist, I believe, that sooner or later the truth will out, and when it does, there's going to be heck to pay. So what do you think, Melody?
Well, I agree. And that's what we talk about all the time. Things, folks, it's not getting better. There's so many problems that we face. They're not going to go away, just like they're not going to pull back on quantitative easing. I mean, sure, you could actually maybe come up with an argument where you could see Obama, or I should say Obama, but Bernanke, stop $10 billion from the mortgage-backed securities. But I really don't even see him doing that. It's impossible, unless they are ready. And someone called me today and says, what's happening in the middle of September? Folks, there's a lot of things that are going to be happening in the middle of September. You got the debt ceiling. You got the debt ceiling that they're going to have to address. We already know that, everyone is saying he's going to have to make a decision about the QE3, where they're going to start cutting back. And if they do that, yeah, it might just be over. If you have that 10-year yield start moving up to 3%, a lot of people said 6%, it's all over. I say above 3 to 4, it's going to be all over. You have all these derivatives that their underlying assets are have those 10-year bonds. So it'll be interesting. Very interesting.
It's always interesting. What else is interesting about the last time we had the debt ceiling debate was 2011. Do you know what the low price of gold was that year?
What was it, Al?
1325. That was the low at the end of January of 2011. And shortly after the debt ceiling debate concluded, by that point, gold had peaked over $1,900. Gold went up, almost $600 an ounce in about 8 months. And it was in the midst of the debt ceiling debate. Now, I don't know that that has any bearing on what's happening here. Again, we're going into another debt ceiling debate, and with the fact that there was a correlation in the past doesn't mean there's a correlation at all.
And they had also had lowered our rating. The one rating agency had lowered our rating. Mm-hmm. That had a lot to do with it. That really bumped it. That bumped it from 16 up over to 19.
Mm-hmm.
So
a lot of things going on, but it's just interesting to me.
And it always happens in September. I mean, September is the worst month for stocks. People remember October because that's when you had the biggest crashes. But historically, September, you'll see more moves to the downside over the full month in stocks than you will any other month.
Well, it should make for an interesting fall and early winter. We'll see how things go. We talked a little about this earlier, and it involved the special that you had on silver coins.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you've got $20 in face value junk silver and $20 in eagles and $20 in rounds and $20 in what was the other one, Melody? Oh, Morgan's.
Morgan's. Morgan's silver dollars.
See, you think I can't remember these things. I remember these things. I pretend I don't remember sometimes.
That's another program.
Yeah, that's another program. But you point out that the price of junk silver is rising. And that's the nickel, that's the dimes and the quarters and perhaps half dollars that are available that don't have any numismatic value, but they're silver. And, they've been legitimate money in the past. And in the event of a serious problem, they would be again. People would be glad to see silver dimes. People would be glad. They would take them in trade. And that silver dime might be equivalent to a $5 bill. Right now, it'd be equivalent to $2.50, $3 for a silver dime. The day might come, it's worth the equivalent of a $5 bill. People would take that. And the point I want to make is the reason that the supplies of junk silver are a little tight, and the reason there's the premium on the junk silver is rising, from what you were telling me, junk silver has become more expensive than silver eagles on a per ounce basis. Is that true? It's 20 cents more expensive. Not a big deal, but it's interesting.
It is interesting, and I'm really surprised with this little move up that we've seen in silver. I would expect the premium to drop a little bit, and we did see more product come online from the secondary market, which I had anticipated. But they are selling for just a tad more than what the silver eagles are and per ounce. So it is interesting. The demand is there. And again, people are holding on to their products.
Yeah.
The 90% silver is that secondary market, mm-hmm. and people aren't selling. They're holding it. And that's why you have this difficult in getting the product.
Well, a point from my perspective is, at least the possible point is this. People aren't holding on to their junk silver simply because they believe it's a good investment. Silver eagles are a good investment. Silver bars are a good investment. But the junk silver plays a possible role as a monetary replacement. It strikes me as at least likely that much of the reason that there's a premium now on the junk silver. Why? Because people think they may need those silver dimes. There's a growing number of people. I won't say it's certainly not a majority, but there's a growing number of people that are sitting back and saying, I think the day is coming when I'm going to need some cash to get some groceries, and that cash would have been the best cash, maybe just those small coins, dimes, quarters, halves, whatever. We'll see.
What's nice about the 90% silver is, and you're right, it's spendable. I mean, no, you do not want to take it to the store now and spend it. However, in that extreme emergency, you can do so if there's no other options open mm-hmm. to you. And that's mm-hmm. what makes the 90% so valuable, is as an investment. Same way with the Morgan dollars. You can still take that Morgan silver dollar and take it to the store. They might look at you very odd. I mean, I certainly wouldn't do it, and I would use my 90% first. However, if I hadn't eaten in 2 days, and I wanted a sandwich and I had to go buy it, yeah, I would use it. And so it's still acceptable for commerce. So that's why it makes those items so valuable.
I understand that it's just interesting to see that there's evidence, not proof, but evidence, that some people are beginning to anticipate. There's a rising awareness that maybe I'm going to need some silver in the near future, and not just for an investment, maybe for spending. So we see silver being treated as a monetary metal right now, and perhaps that's the explanation for the 20-cent premium over silver eagles. It's not a big deal, but maybe it's still a leaf in the breeze. I'm Alfred Adusk here with Melody Cederstrom. We're on Financial Survival. We will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.